Warning, this sentence is the only one in the show that has no chance of offending anyone.
Today's episode of The Scathing Atheist is brought to you by the new Catholic workout plan, 8-Minute Absolution. Get ready to kneel, stand, sit, kneel, and pray your way to a toned butt, rock-hard thighs, and a deeply rooted shame of your humanity. 8-Minute Absolution, Catholic calisthenics at their finest. And now, The Scathing Atheist.
I mean, what must God think of our country if now, again, rather than sending people to Uganda to explain better agricultural techniques, we send scientists to Africa to say how wonderful the homosexual lifestyle is?
I'm Craig DePew, president of the Secular Student Alliance at Georgia Southern University, and
we did, in fact, evolve from filthy monkey men.
It's May 1st,
and L.A. Clippers owner Donald Sterling just won a bet with Mel Gibson.
I'm No Illusions.
I'm Heath Enright, and from racial hominy, New York, New York.
And kiss my grits, Podunk, Georgia, this is The Scathing Atheist.
In this week's episode, we explore the land of milk and honey dipping, with 10,000 lakes nearby.
The state of South Carolina will volunteer to be stupider.
And a group of Christians will protest gay marriage by refusing to swallow.
But first, the diatribe. You know, you can kind of tell how desperate the theists are getting by how deep into the apologetic bag they're reaching. A listener named Brian emailed me one the other day that he'd encountered, and it may just be the dumbest apologetic you've ever heard. I call it the argument from the properly clotted cock. Okay, so it goes like this. In Genesis, God tells Abraham to circumcise his kids and his slaves, and he says very specifically that in the future this should always be done when the kid is 8 days old. So why 8 days? Well, as it turns out, there's a plasma protein called prothrombin that aids in the clotting of blood. Now, prothrombin comes from vitamin K, and wouldn't you know it, it's at its peak level in our bodies when we are, drumroll please, 8 days old. Therefore, Jesus. Okay, all right, you didn't follow me there. That's because you were using logic. Basically, what they're saying here is that there's a medical justification for the specificity of Abraham's proclamation that Abraham couldn't have possibly known about unless God had told him about it. Now, surprise, surprise, with a little bit of research, this one's easy to refute. It may not surprise you, for example, to learn that the number one complication from circumcision isn't bleeding to death through your mutilated penis due to a vitamin K deficiency. Don't get me wrong, excessive bleeding is the number one complication, and it can, in rare cases, be fatal. But it's not like the one that's most likely to cause serious problems. That would be glandular amputation, which the rest of us, like in the non-medical world, would call accidentally cutting off parts that are just regular dick. And surprise, surprise, the likelihood of that complication goes down the bigger the dick gets. But all this is pretty secondary, of course, when you consider it against the larger fact that the ideal time to perform a circumcision is fucking never. You know, maybe God could have divinely inspired them to stop whacking off their baby's foreskins altogether if he was getting involved. How can there be an ideal time to do something that is neither necessary nor good? So yeah, it's a ridiculously stupid apologetic, but that doesn't mean it's ineffective. Think about this from the point of view of a theist who might not be versed in critical thinking. This sounds convincing, and odds are pretty good that if somebody suddenly springs this one on you, you wouldn't have the foreknowledge of coagulants and circumcision complications you'd need to dismantle it. That's why apologists love shit that centers around, like, bacterial flagellums or Boltzmann brains or geological minutiae. Odds are that nobody in the room is going to be able to refute it. So what I'd probably do is I would say prothrombin three times with an increasingly incredulous inflection. It would go like this. Prothrombin. Prothrombin? Prothrombin? Really? Your proof for God rests in a plasma protein you'd never heard of before you came across this particular argument? Are you fucking kidding me? So wait, let me get this straight. If prothrombin levels peaked at 10 days, not 8, that would disprove God, right? Because isn't that exactly what God said in Genesis 17:12? He said, "And lo, on the 8th day a vital coagulant will be in abundance in thy infant." No? So you're admitting that this is a bet that you can only win, right? Yes, sure. If you cherry-pick both the Bible and science, you can assemble a series of unrelated facts and make them sound Jesus-y, but that's not how science works. You know, you didn't have a group of scientists trying to figure out why the rate of complication from circumcision was so much lower in precisely 8-day-old babies. What you had was a bunch of religiously motivated wackaloons data mining every obscure medical and biblical fact with the hopes that somewhere the two of them would line up. So here's my advice to Brian and anyone else who finds themselves at the receiving end of this science is evil unless, of course, it agrees with us and then it's infallible argument. Ask them, all right, so if I can find a place where the science doesn't line up with your Bible, you'll admit there's no God, right? Science is now the yardstick we're using to measure your religion? Believe me, that should end the debate pretty quickly.
They're talking about your Jesus.
We interrupt this broadcast and bring you a special news bulletin.
Joining me for headlines tonight is stalwart defender of the black man, Heath Enright. Heath, are you ready to discuss the latest racism scandal in the NBA?
Well, as you know, I have my finger on the pulse of African-American culture.
Yes, you do.
And the word on the street is that Los Angeles Clippers soon-to-be ex-owner Donald Sterling is an enormous racist.
So I've heard.
I mean, just look at the Clippers roster. He's clearly got some sort of problem hiring white people. I mean, there were two white dudes on that entire team, and I'm counting Blake Griffin as one of them.
So, oh, wow. So even if you grade him on a lenient curve, he still fails.
Yeah.
Now, I guess it's a good thing, though, that they've punished him now by removing any obligation he had to sit in an arena full of the mongrel races like, you know, whites and whatever Blake Griffin is.
Exactly. Now, in our lead story tonight, in What Are Atheists Good At news, the survey says it's not raping kids. That's right. Demonstrating
awesome.
That the particular brand of religious nonsense doesn't matter, self-professed Wiccan warlock Jim Irvin of West Virginia promised to perform acts of magic on a sick mother in exchange for sexual favors from her 3, 9, and 13-year-old children.
Oh, wow.
He will not pass go, nor will he collect $200 on his way to jail, despite his sincerely held religious beliefs otherwise.
You know what?
So good.
But as horrible as this story is, I fucking love it, because every time I make the point that it isn't this religion or that religion, it's religion, somebody invariably emails me and says, no, you forgot to exclude the Wiccans. And I have to say, no, the fuck, I didn't. And
yeah,
now
right.
That will be followed by a link, so I appreciate that.
Yeah, we're good men and thorough. Now, this is tragic. Seriously, though. Just think, if the kids were atheists, they would have at least gotten some real medical treatment in exchange for all those sticky little hand jobs they had to give. I mean, come on. You got to get...
And even if it was like an alternative medicine guru, he probably would have let them get away with homeopathic hand jobs, which, you know, are basically like adjusting his nuts or something like that. Minor, subtle
junk.
Exactly.
It has to be as a result of contact. That's the rule. Heard that from a gym teacher one time. Anyway, on the other side of the coin here... At least one study shows that when you offer to perform atheist acts on someone's dying mother, they're much less willing to blow you than you would think.
I'm just going to assume that you read that in PubMed and we'll move on.
Of course I did.
And from the Would Somebody Just Persecute Me Already file tonight, we bring you the twisted tale of Todd Starnes' desperate and shameful attempt to plug his new book by religion-whoring his publicist's toddler. The story begins when the 5-year-old daughter of one Marco Perez allegedly accused a teacher at her school of stopping her when she tried to pray.
What'd you do at school today, honey? I drank milk, ate paste, and then I debated my kindergarten teacher on the constitutionality of the landmark Engel versus Vidal decision. What? Seriously? That's
the
story?
It's one of those things that 5-year-olds are always complaining about. Now, Perez did what any parent who is the vice president of the Christian publishing firm handling Todd Starnes' upcoming book about Christian persecution in America would do, and made no effort whatsoever to follow up with his daughter's school. Instead, he opted to post a video on YouTube where his daughter cutely explains the intricacies of legitimate issues of secular encroachment.
Now, seriously?
Yeah. And by a coincidence that smacks of either divine intervention or being a fucking asshole, Todd Starnes picks up this story and runs with it.
What story?
Right.
This is nothing. It's a kid throwing blocks and then lying about praying instead when he got in trouble. It's a crotch injury away from a Bob Saget unfunny video.
Exactly. Awful. Now, upon hearing about this in the local news, the school conducted an investigation and apologized to the parents for the perceived slight, though they pointed out that not only could they not confirm any of the details of the story, but they couldn't even find evidence that the accused teacher was anywhere near the lunchroom when this supposedly happened in the lunchroom.
Did they check Kevin Sorbo's alibi? Was Hercules that fucking polytheist anywhere near the lunchroom?
Now, apparently, apologizing and not doing it in the first place wasn't enough for Perez, who is now threatening to sue the school for get
for
this
what?
Shit. Oh, it's great.
He wants to sue him because they publicly defamed him by pointing out that the public accusation he made was baseless. Because apparently in his world, publicly damning someone is only okay if you haven't checked your facts first.
And in invisible hand job news, there's nothing about badly educating black people in the Bible. So South Carolina Republican Ray Moore, as part of his campaign for lieutenant governor, is proposing that we dismantle the public school system entirely in favor of free market solutions like government-subsidized, tax-exempt church schools.
Free
apparently
market,
only creationist science can help us keep up with China. That's going to do it.
You know, I was just thinking that South Carolinians were getting way too smart for their own good. So.
Just secede. Now, Moore believes public schools, or, quote, Pharaoh's schools, and other such distribution centers of true information to poor people, pose a serious threat to Christians, which they do,
yeah,
and
right.
should. But now that we're on the subject, I don't remember a single mention in the Bible about Hindu people, either. I mean, should we legislate them out of existence, too? Like, what are we even talking about?
You know what? And I checked this afternoon, and it turns out that there's also nothing in the Bible that forbids anybody from filling Ray Moore's parlor up with hungry hyenas with rabies. So I thought maybe our South Carolinian listeners might like to know that one. And in Do I Hear 80 news tonight, a group of Christians in Virginia are calling for a 40-day fast in protest of gay marriage.
80!
The hate group in sheep's clothing warns that the coming homopocalypse is all but inevitable if Christians don't stand up against the forces of equality once again.
Really? Personally, I think it's going to backfire. I mean, you get to day 30 of a hunger strike, all of a sudden, eating a dick doesn't sound so bad, I would imagine. No matter who you are. Christian as you might be.
Now, unsure of how becoming uncomfortably hungry will influence gays to give up their quest for equality, the group instead decides to compare their struggle to David and Goliath. And get this, they're supposed to be David.
You gotta admit, you'd love to watch a bunch of delirious, starving Christians attack a gay wedding with pebbles and slingshots like that story, though.
Okay, yeah.
It's a fun...
There are
for me.
Those things that one does have to admit, and that is one of those things.
And from the Twin Shitties file, federal judges in Minneapolis are set to decide whether the United States will officially recognize the self-proclaimed micronation called Kingdom of Heaven. The imaginary place in question currently has two alleged citizens, Dennis May and his wife Tammy.
Yeah, see, this didn't work out too well for Peter Griffin. I'm saying there's historical precedent on this.
And if this story didn't write itself already, the couple also happens to operate a sewage excavation and treatment company in suburban Coon Rapids. Tammy is under indictment for hundreds of thousands of dollars in tax fraud, but insists they don't have taxes in heaven kingdoms, so she's not responsible. Then again, she also claims Paradise is operating a shit carting business in Minnesota, so
right.
her judgment is called into question a little bit.
Although I will say, if that turns out to be true, I'm perfectly willing to be wrong about the whole atheism thing. If at the end all the religious people walk through the gate and instead of streets of gold or virgins or their own planet or whatever they're expecting, it's like it's that fecophilia scene from Jurassic Park except it's snowing. Like, I would gladly go and then spend my eternity in hell as long as I got to see like four or five people, like the look on their faces when St. Peter hands them elbow length gloves and a shovel and says, get to work, boys.
When this case is over, though, and they free up a little manpower, maybe the IRS can send a couple interns to work on getting back the estimated $80 billion in revenue that we already lose every
right.
year due to religious tax exemptions. And I'm not saying nobody should be tax-exempt, but you have to earn that shit, you know? Look back in the history of this country. You have to earn it. If religious groups want huge special privileges like that, we get to genocide you like the Native Americans first.
Oh, fuck,
and all the churches are required to have slots in poker. This is just fair. Those are the rules now. We set a precedent.
All right, but I think that the synagogues should just have to add slots in poker. Just... I've already had their...
Just terrible and subtle and Holocaust-y. Nice.
Doubling down on the genocide jokes tonight.
That's what we do.
And you can have my bacon when you take it from my greasy dead hands news tonight. Nearly 200 Subway restaurants in the UK have kowtowed to pressure from Muslim groups and removed ham and bacon from their menus entirely.
Wow.
In an effort to be more inclusive to their Muslim customers, they've introduced halal meats in these shops. And in efforts to be less inclusive to everybody else, they've taken away all the other shit. What the fuck?
we're already putting more pigs in the New York subways to keep all the Muslims out. So,
and it's working.
Yeah, it's working. It's working.
Now, ultimately, this is a tiny little story. It's not a huge deal or anything, but it's worth reporting on for two reasons in my mind. One, it demonstrates the fact that it's not enough for religious people to deny themselves something. They also have to deny you that thing.
Yeah. See, for example, orgasms.
Yeah, there you go.
They hate that one.
And number two, I feel like as Americans, our love for bacon will unite us against Sharia law in a way that acid attacks against women somehow fail to. And if you don't believe, if that sounds too harsh for you, consider this. Yeah, exactly. The stop and frisk thing in New York was going on at the same time that New Yorkers were rising up in a singular voice to protect their right to buy Pepsi by the bucket.
We did. And you can that still get a bucket happen. Of Pepsi.
Yes.
Just in a bunch of things. And in soul-crushing Job news, Italian sculptor Enrico Jobs, the enormous crucifix in honor of Pope John Paul II, claimed its first life besides Jesus when the 1,320-pound savior portion of the structure may or may not have sprung to life and tackled to death 21-year-old Marco Guzmini.
Great visual.
Now, yeah, miraculously, though, he had a Bible in his front pocket, which was only slightly harmed in the crushing it. So,
well, there you go.
There's a lesson in that.
See, now, I think to be fair, though, this should have to count as a minus one on John Paul II's miracle count. So, he should have to like go back a rung, be de-sainted temporarily or asterisked or otherwise Pete Rosed in some way because of this shit.
Now, according to his settlement in outrageous claims court, Guzmini goes straight to heaven automatically, obviously. His roommate gets a 4.0 GPA for the semester,
right,
of course.
Right, yeah.
And he gets to slap God in the face once really hard with everyone watching.
Oh, shit.
And everyone says, oh! So, yeah, it's a pretty sweet settlement.
You know what I wonder, though? Because a lot of times when you see this kind of thing, it turns out later that, like, the dude teased the statue or provoked it in some way. So I don't want to rush to blame Jesus on this one. We'll wait until all the facts are in.
Just to be fair, this story also makes for a good horror movie. You got to admit, with like Jesus as the homicidal maniac, pop up anywhere there's a cross.
Nice,
like, tiny little Jesus off people's necklaces. But like in the Bible Belt with the enormous eyesore crosses, they get the Stay Puffed Marshmallow Man sized Jesus attacking the town.
Oh, I'd be fucked.
Definitely want to watch that. So I guess we'll call this the Holy Ghostbusters list.
I like it. I like.
Guess
you going.
See where I'm going with this. 30 seconds on the clock. Religious horror movies, go.
Awesome, awesome. I'm glad you said that because I already had a good one. The Burned Witch Project was very profitable nice. For them.
What about Good Friday the 13th?
Or how about the Texas Public Education Massacre? That one scares me to this day, I'll tell you what.
Brainsaw Massacre. Like those lobotomies, they're helpful for religion purposes. What about Pulp Crucifixion?
Ooh, appropriate.
God's dead, baby. God's dead. Who's choppers?
How about Easter Morning of the Living Dead? Because he was a zombie, and it was kind of like, they all came back. And
nice, nice. What about I Know Who You Fingered at Bible Camp Last Summer? God's always wise. He'll get you.
Worst porn ever. How about Whatever Happened to Baby Jesus? And like the few people who got that loved me for it, by the way.
Baby Jane reference?
Yes, sir. Great movie.
Obscure. Well done. What about the Iraqi Horror Picture Show?
And a classic. Excellent, dude. Well done.
Thanks.
Maybe Gland of the Dead? Not exactly
right,
religious.
But porn, porn is always acceptable, optional.
I keep trying to tell my wife the same thing.
Speaking of which, Raelian versus Sexual Predator. The battle it out.
Which I think is a sequel to Rosemary's Post-Pubescent but Still Way Too Young to Fuck Kid, I think. Just also religious in nature.
Wow.
Suck on that, motherfuckers.
Not too young for the old Roman war helmet, I would imagine, though, if I'm guessing. I'm guessing. And as a trusted source for Google suggestions over this year or so, I'd suggest everybody try out a search for Roman war helmet. Look for images, text, whatever.
Yeah, and turn safe search off. And while you're doing that, we're going to wrap up the headlines. Heath, thanks as always.
Bahayanara, bitches.
Oh, nice. Well done. And when we come back, Adam Reeks from the Herd Mentality Podcast will join Heath and I to decide which one of us should fuck my wife.
We will.
It's
It's time for the Atheist Calendar portion of the show. This is the theoretically monthly few minutes we set aside to get you caught up with all the great atheist, secular, and skeptical meetups going on around the country and around the world. Secular get-togethers are in full swing now, so if you want in on some of these events coming up in June and July, you'll want to start making plans now. On June 14th in London, the Center for Inquiry is hosting an awesome-sounding event called God in the Lab, the Science of Religious Belief. The topic lines are great, and I'm getting shit for not including more British events, so there you go. Definitely check out their website, though, because they can sell it way better than I can. The weekend of the 21st of June, the SSA will be holding the western half of their not really coastal, but on that half of the country anyway, meeting in Phoenix, Arizona. The other half will be in Columbus, Ohio on the week of July 12th. Of course, the biggest of the big and the one I'm desperately hoping to stow aboard some landing gear to get to this year is the amazing meeting in Vegas, July 10th to the 13th. Daniel motherfucking Dennett is the keynote, but they've also got DJ Grothy, Julia Galef, the SGU guys, Michael Shermer, and Eugenie Scott. Plus, they've got the one and only Geo Rob hosting, so holy shit, if somebody donates TAM tickets and airfare and a place to stay while I'm there, I will compliment your genitals to unprecedented levels. Also wanted to throw a shout out to the North Texas Secular Convention. I believe there's a bit of a mix-up there, and they had to delay it, so I'm not 100% sure when it's happening, but the last I heard, they were going to have Greta Christina, Elise Anders, and friend of the show Daryl Ray there, so worth keeping abreast of them as well. Should be late July, early August, but right now their website doesn't have an exact date. Now, that'll do it for the June-July calendar, but a quick reminder on the May calendar. This weekend is ReasonCon, and they moved to a larger venue, so there may still be free tickets available by the time this episode airs. Hope to see you there. You can find a link to more info on ReasonCon and all the events discussed in the show notes for this episode at scathingatheist.com. Hello, ladies and gentlemen. I'm your host, Chip Shipley, and it's time for another episode of the Radiocarbon Dating Game. We've got three eligible but religiously bigoted bachelors who will only date a woman who shares their taste in omnipotent daddy figures, and one religiously unaffiliated bachelorette. So without further ado, let's meet our contestants. First, straight from Williamsburg, New York, and representing the oldest of the Abrahamic faiths is Chacham Leibovitz. Chacham, how do you feel about your chances tonight?
As a Jew, I'm obligated to assume the worst.
Very well, and representing the Islamic faith is Al-Mahi Al-Muk. Al-Mahi, are you excited?
No, because my faith forbids all forms of joy.
I expected you to sound less white.
I don't do voices.
All righty then. And lastly, representing Christianity is Ray Schmumpfert?
Yeah, yes, that's right, yes.
Shouldn't that read Ray Comfort?
No, don't be ridiculous. That guy's married and adultery's a sin. So I'm some other bloke. Definitely not me. I'm not me, no.
Wait a minute, are you sure you're not Ray Comfort, though? Because you have the porn mustache and everything.
Look, I'm Schmumpfert, got it? Just call me Ray.
Whatever helps you sleep at night. And, of course, these three questionably eligible gentlemen will be vying for the hand of tonight's lovely bachelorette. So let's give a big round of applause to the beautiful Fanny Phillip. Fanny, you look lovely tonight.
Thank you, Chip.
Now, as I'm sure you're aware, all three of our bachelors told our producers they would only date a woman who shares their religious conviction, so you're here tonight not just to choose a date, but to choose a god. Are you ready to do that?
I'm ready, Chip, and I'd appreciate it if you'd stop looking at my boobs.
Well, I'm not going to, but you'll get used to it. So feel free to question our bachelors in any sexy, cleavagey way you choose.
Okay, my first question is for Mahaki. If I was your Muslim girlfriend, where would you take me on our first date?
Whoa. I don't recall giving you permission to speak.
Oh, well, may I have your permission to speak?
Suppose.
Fuck you. My next question is for Chachem, then. If I was your Hasidic girlfriend, where would you take me on our first date?
To my mother's house for approval.
Right. Ray, same question?
Well, I'd take you somewhere where I would be revered as a god amongst men. So it could be pretty much anywhere, crematoriums, supermarkets, but probably a church, though, so we could share in our mutual love for Jesus.
Wow, this just keeps getting better. My next question is also for Ray. What kind of music would you listen to while we made love?
Well, no, hang on, hold on a second. Our relationship would be restricted to intimate hand-holding and me accidentally brushing my hand across your boobs now and again until we're married.
Good, because otherwise I would have had to throw acid at her.
To answer your question, probably Nickelback.
Wait. Al-Mahi, you didn't bring acid with you today, did you?
I feel like you want me to say no.
Yeah.
My next question is for Chacham, I guess. What's the craziest place you would ever make whoopee?
What the hell is the whoopee?
Never mind. My next question is for Al, whatever the hell your name is. If we got married and had kids, what would you want our kids to grow up to be?
Boys.
Wow. All right. Ray, if I was your Christian girlfriend, where would you see us in 10 years?
Oh, raptured to heaven, watching all the sinners burn in torment for not taking me more seriously about the bananas.
What?
Oh, I mean, for not taking Ray Comfort more seriously about the banana.
Okay.
All right, Fanny, now we've only got time for one more question before you make your big decision, so make sure it's an important one.
Okay, the most. Chacham, if I was your Jewish girlfriend, could I expect a lot of oral?
Oral? Oh, only if you washed it before, during, and never on the Sabbath.
Huh. Al Mahahi, same question.
I only eat that stuff if it's from a halal butcher. Would you consider circumcision?
Yeah.
That can be delicious.
Seriously, dude? Seriously? Ray, oral sex at all?
Oh, sinful and debaucherous and worthy of an eternity of torment and hell.
All right, Fanny, it's time to make your choice. Which of these eligible bachelors will it be?
Huh. How about you, Chip? Do you go down?
I'm an atheist and I can breathe through my ears.
I guess I'll have to go with you then.
No, wait. That's not fair. You can't do that. My faith is easier to pick than a broken nose, let alone that guy.
Ray, I'd like you to very carefully hand me that glass over there, and don't drink from it or let it touch your skin.
Wait a minute.
This one here?
Yeah. The halal clear liquid. The one that says HCL.
Nope. Sorry, guys. I'm the host. I make the rules. Ray, don't hand him that glass. Fanny, excellent choice. That's going to be our show for this week. I've been Chip Shipley reminding all the ladies out there to support women's rights by fucking an atheist. Before we blow our load this week, I need to thank the incomparable Adam Reeks from the Herd Mentality podcast for channeling Ray Comfort for us tonight, but I also wanted to make you aware of a very cool fundraiser that he's doing. There's too much detail to squeeze it into the outro of this episode, but here's the elevator pitch. Adam is trying to help raise money for an atheist in need by auctioning off a handcrafted life-size cow. Here's hoping that sentence piqued your curiosity. I strongly encourage you to get more details at herdmentalitypodcast.com. It's for a really good cause. It's a really cool cow, and in my experience, we have extraordinarily generous listeners. You can listen to episode 56 of his show to get the long and short of it, and if I haven't already convinced you, I should point out that right after he spills the beans about the cow auction, he interviews Lawrence Krauss, so there's plenty of reasons to listen to that show. I also wanted to let you know about a Twitter project I've got going on this week. As you may know, we're about to hit the halfway mark of the Bible. Now, the Book of Psalms is way too long for us to go into our customary holy Babel level of detail, so leading up to it, I'm going to be tweeting an atheist summary of each of the 150 Psalms starting at midnight tonight. I'll tweet one every hour, which means I'll be finishing up a couple hours before next week's episode comes out. Alright, so one more quick thanks to Adam. I need to thank Heath for leaving some of the dick jokes for the rest of us. I need to thank Lucinda for being so cute and charismatic that she'll make up for my socially awkward misanthropy this weekend when we're meeting our listeners for the first time. And of course, I need to thank Don and the Secular Student Alliance at Georgia Southern University for A, providing this week's Farnsworth quote, and B, having the nerve to be part of a secular student alliance at a university in South Georgia. Well done, guys and gals. But most of all, of course, we need to thank this week's best people, Max, Adam, Richard, Dan, Cincy, Farmer, Alfred, Tabin, Graham, Sherry, Magnus, AJ, and Rachel. Max, Adam, and Richard, whose ejaculations can only be described as Vesuvian, Dan, Cincy, Farmer, and Alfred, whose posters Kryptonian kids have on their walls, Tabin, Graham, and Sherry, who are so secular God knows better than to fuck with them after they sneeze, and Magnus, AJ, and Rachel, who are so fast they make Mr. Miyagi look like a pansy for needing that second chopstick. These 12 laudable listeners, also known as the Spotless Dozen, have helped to postpone the impending dick joke famine this week by giving us money. Not everybody has the vitality and sensuality it takes to give us money, but if you think the world needs more secular healing, you can donate to us at patreon.com/scathingatheist. You can make a per-episode donation there, and in return, you get your episodes early, you get 10 to 30% more episode every week, and depending on how much you donate, you get a bunch of other cool shit, too. And if you want to forgo all the cool shit and just make a one-time donation, you can do that by clicking on the donate button on the right side of the homepage at scathingatheist.com. And if you'd like to help, but spending money isn't your style, you can also help us a ton by giving us a 5-star review on iTunes. And thanks, by the way, to all the lovely listeners that heeded our call for more iTunes reviews last week. It really means a lot to us. If you have questions, comments, or death threats, you'll find all the contact info on the contact page at scathingatheist.com. All the music used in this episode was written and performed by yours truly, and yes, I did have my permission. Thank you. we come back, Adam Reeks from the Herd Mentality Podcast will join Heath and I to decide which one of us should fuck my wife.
We will, though.
I had to ask her permission to tell that joke. She said yes. So.
That's good, though. It's not a rape joke if you ask her permission.
If she says yes. You know.
Yeah, well, that's the most important part. It's the yes, I guess.